Outside the White House was a sight to behold on Saturday. Just yards apart, protests were taking place about Yemen, Syria, Bahrain, and Libya. Naveed Nasser, a local activist, conducted a guided tour of the protests, beginning with the largest of the demonstrations. That morning's Washington Post said of Yemen, quote, "A new sense of national identity is spreading across Yemen's divided society as rival tribesmen and political foes unite to oust President Ali Abdullah Saleh, who on Friday said he would step aside as long as he could deliver power to safe hands." Tens of thousands of anti-government demonstrators took to the streets Friday to demand Saleh's ouster. Once privileged members of Saleh's Hashid tribe marched side by side with Southerners persecuted by his regime. They chanted, "One demand, one Yemen." The national anthem blared over loudspeakers. "We are of one heart because we all have the same demand. Ali Abdullah Saleh has to leave," said Abdul Raham Saeed, an 18-year-old student. That from the Washington Post. Naveed Nasser had this to say on Yemen.
Naveed, we're outside the White House. Pretty extraordinary day. A number of protests going on. Take us on a tour of what is taking place today.
Sure. Well, what's going on here is people demonstrating for freedom in Yemen. Yemen is a country that has only been together for a short amount of time. Prior to that, it was divided into north and south. South Yemen, at least outwardly, had very socialist inclinations and was allied with the Soviet Union. There was a referendum in Yemen in the early 80s that unified the country together. But since then, since that time, Yemen has had one ruler, Saleh, the current president. And Saleh has been allowed his country to be used as a military base and a place for torture. When the U.S. wants someone tortured, they want someone in prison, Yemen is one of the places where they send it to. Saleh has also further impoverished the country. And people have been killed in Yemen for protesting. The reaction to the U.S. media, and the U.S. media has been muted at best. In other places, in Iran, when people were not getting slaughtered in this manner, the U.S. media was all over it. They couldn't get enough of that story. In Yemen, it's almost as if nothing has happened. Saleh is still firmly the U.S.'s man in Yemen, even if his generals are defecting. It's absolutely... any U.S. citizen should be ashamed of what the Obama administration is doing with regards to Yemen, should be ashamed of what is happening with not just the passive assent, but the active aid of the U.S. government in Yemen. People are getting slaughtered, people are getting imprisoned, people are getting tortured, and they want their country back. They want their country back from someone who has ruled it for way too long with an iron fist. Yemen is more than a military base and a place for the U.S. to dump its torture victims. It's a country with its own history. It's a country that wishes to be free. And it's the most impoverished, it's one of the most impoverished countries in the world, period, but definitely the most in the Middle East. And the economic policies that have been implemented by Saleh at the behest of the U.S. have not helped in that regard at all. So the Yemenis wish to be free, and I think they deserve it.
Sylvia Hader is from the Bronx, or as she put it...
Where are you from?
Originally from the boogie down Bronx in New York, and then by way of Yemen, southern Yemen specifically.
Directly following her speech before hundreds of demonstrators in front of the White House, Sylvia Hader offered her thoughts on the situation in Yemen.
There's a massive protest going on today in front of the White House. What brought you out here?
To put it simply, really, it's just solidarity with the Yemeni protesters who are just trying to make a way for themselves. They want to be able to break free from the daily oppression, and it's not a government thing. It's the idea that they want to be able to create their own manifest destiny, and they can't do that when they're hungry, and they can't do that and they're hungry because they don't have any jobs, and they don't have any jobs because of a corrupt government. So
the Saleh regime must go is the sign that's just behind you. Talk about the Saleh regime.
So the Saleh regime is a regime in the sense that it has been ongoing for about 33 years now, and he doesn't want to go. Not only does he not want to go, his minions, and by his minions I mean family as well as those in his keep, are going to inherit unless we do something. And by we, I mean the collective we, mostly the Yemeni populace, but in addition to that, the support of the de facto support of those who are more fortunate here. And after a while, people just said enough is enough. So we are here to lend our voices to those who cannot speak for themselves.
What's the significance of coming in front of the White House?
I think for the Arab population, is a very oral society, right? So we go on speeches, we go on poetry, we go on the verbal manifestations of our feelings. However, coming here in the States, we've learned that to talk about the things that are important is not enough. You have to be able to get a little bit of media and coverage, because if it were just about the issues alone, a lot more people would be successful. So we came here in front of the United States White House because that is the emblem of America. I mean, there's nothing really else more to say. We have our president there. Decisions are made for nations in that house. And we hope to be one of those nations where we get a positive effect and not a de facto, just status quo decision to leave us as is. Because we don't have oil, but we still have a cause.
Is it a coincidence that the protests around Yemen are following what we saw in Tunisia and Egypt?
You know, that's kind of like the chicken or the egg. We're not sure, but we do know that it's rare that this kind of environment and this feeling, this euphoria, if you will, comes around. And so rather than just sit around and let it go, people are trying to capitalize on it for a positive good. We need to capitalize on this movement. And whether it started in Tunisia and, you know, finished in Egypt, or, you know, skipped over us and went to Libya, or, you know, it's going to start in Syria. The point is that they're all interconnected. So one domino falls, and God willing, the rest will too.
Just a few steps away from the Yemen protest was another demonstration over the actions of the Syrian government. Saturday's Washington Post noted, quote, "Syrian security forces fired live ammunition and tear gas rounds at protesters Friday, killing an undetermined number of people as unrest that had been mostly contained in a small southwestern city erupted across the country, including in the capital, Damascus." On the second stop of the guided tour, Naveed Nasser commented on the situation in Syria, as did an individual who declined to give his name or have his picture taken for fear of retaliation against his family in Syria.
Naveed Nasser, we're moving from the Yemen protests, and here we are to a protest around Syria. What are some of the issues here?
Okay, so it's almost like...
And by the way, we've walked a few feet.
Yeah, we just walked a few feet, yeah. It's very interesting. So it's almost like everything... Just about everything I said for Yemen almost applies for Syria. The only difference is that Syria is not a U.S. ally, but Syria has tried to, and by Syria, I do mean President Assad, Bashar Assad, has tried to ingratiate himself with the U.S. in the last few years, but is still firmly an auxiliary member of the Axis of Evil. Having said that, just about everything else that I said for Yemen applies equally for Syria. Internal repression, brutal treatment of protesters. Five have been killed in the city of Deraa in the south of Syria in the past week. So if we see very similar dynamics at play, but we just see in one instance a government that is very friendly to the U.S. And because of that, I'm going to say because of that, the protest movement, the brutality, has garnered very little media attention. And then in Yemen. And then in Syria, it has garnered much more media attention, even from news outlets that are generally much better, like Al Jazeera. Having said all that, the fact is there is a great deal of repression in Syria. You're talking about a presidency which is essentially dynastic in nature. Hafez Assad died, and the presidency passed to his son. That's not really a presidency. You know, that's sort of like a monarchy. You're talking about a dynasty. The people have very legitimate grievances in Syria, very legitimate grievances. And it's important for people who recognize the nature of the relationship between various governments in the U.S. to at the same time understand that people's legitimate grievances need to be addressed. And the people in Yemen are calling for revolution. The people in Syria just want some reforms, some democratic reforms, some freedoms given to them, you know, and I think they deserve it. And I think that Assad will be doing himself a favor and his supporters across the wider Arab world a favor by doing that. And if he doesn't do that, the people have a right to do whatever it is that they deem best. It's their country. It's not Assad's country. It's almost exactly the situation that we're talking about in Yemen. It just happens to be that the nature of the relationship between the governments and the U.S. is radically different. That's all.
Let's see if we can talk to one of the protesters. Can you explain why you're here today?
Well, as you've heard in the last 7 days, there has been just mass killings in lots of Syrian cities. There's a huge protest, which is a first for Syrians. For the last 30 years, we've been quiet, really been beaten up. So, you know, finally we see our brothers and sisters standing up to demand just basic human rights. So we're trying to show them that we are with you, although we're thousands of miles away.
You asked not to have a name and picture used. Why?
We're afraid for our families back home. I don't go back to Syria, so I couldn't really care less, but I'm afraid for my family there.
What might happen?
It can be a brutal system, so, you know, and you can just let your imagination run wild with that.
What do you hope for Syria going forward?
At a minimum, we just hope, well, initially to stop the killings of the innocent people and listen to the demands of people. That's all we're asking for. You know, they're just asking for basic human rights to be heard and just to be represented in their government. So.
And why did you come before the White House? What's the significance of that?
I would hope that the White House, you know, I'm just hoping that President Obama can apply some pressure. I understand that there's really very little hope to do that, but still, you know, it's probably just a message to send to our brothers back home. So.
Thank you so much. Anything else you want to add?
That's about it. We just heard that there are more killings today, so we just pray for the dead and for the injured. So,
thank you.
The overwhelming sentiment of Saturday's various protests outside the White House was captured by signs like the one that read, "People want to overthrow the regime." The pro-government Bahraini protest was the exception to this. Saturday's Washington Post read, quote, "Bahrain's security forces fired tear gas and pellets at anti-government protesters in the Gulf Kingdom after thousands of people poured out of Muslim prayer services Friday and demonstrated against the country's ruling dynasty. Riot police backed by soldiers released thick clouds of tear gas to disperse protesters in Shiite villages," end quote. Naveed Nasser described the situation in Bahrain as apartheid.
Where to next, Naveed Nasser?
Okay, this is going to be much more difficult for me. So in Bahrain, you have a situation where the protests, actually, I've been following the situation in Bahrain for years. It's not just something that happened just a few weeks ago. The protest movement in Bahrain is years old. And in Bahrain, essentially, you're talking about a situation I'm hesitant to use this word for... But I will say it because Bahrainis themselves have used it, which is apartheid. You're talking about a situation where 70% of the population has very little rights. They're relegated to slums. They have few hope of employment. And by 70%, I'm talking about the majority Shia population. And you're talking about a country that has been ruled by diktat by the Al-Khalifa regime. The Al-Khalifa family imposed themselves on the island of Bahrain many, many, many years ago. They've ruled it as a dynasty. It's a monarchy, Bahrain. And the Bahraini people, the majority of the Bahraini people, want democracy. They're tired of the monarchy. Unfortunately, there is a great deal of sectarianism in Bahrain. And a great deal of people who have privilege at the expense of the 70% who don't. And they don't want to see any fundamental change happen in Bahrain. And they're here in front of the White House... with their stylish sunglasses and their gelled hair.
One of the signs the woman was holding said, "God bless our king." Yeah. Do you agree with that sentiment?
No comment. I can't. What I say isn't suitable for for thefightback.org. No, it's not going to be suitable for airing. It's not going to be suitable for replay. No, I do not agree.
And as you've taken us throughout the Middle East, we've walked about 30 yards.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, Yemen, Syria, Bahrain, all within, very close proximity of each other here.
Do you want to stay on Bahrain or should we head over to Libya?
Yeah, I'd rather not stay here much longer.
Okay.
Let's go.
The final stop on the guided tour of the White House protests was Libya. Saturday's Washington Post read, quote, "The United States and its allies are considering whether to supply weapons to the Libyan opposition as coalition airstrikes fail to dislodge government forces from around key contested towns, according to U.S. and European officials," end quote. Naveed Nasser called Libya the most complex situation of all of these countries.
We're heading to Libya, walking to the Libyan protests right in front of the White House, walking by the one that doesn't quite fit, genetically modified food.
Yeah,
that's a very interesting issue.
It is an interesting issue. I'm wondering why they chose today to, they stick out like a sore thumb. But it's actually a very interesting issue. The extent of what I know about it can feel like a thimble, but it's a very interesting issue. What I do know, let's just not even get into what I know, because I may say something that's factually inaccurate, and I don't want to do that.
I was wondering, talk a little about Libya, and also, you're from Iran.
Yeah, full disclosure, yes. I'm from Iran. So, in Libya, you have an interesting situation. You have people who've been ruled by one man for 42 years, which is Muammar Gaddafi. 42 years he's been in power. And many of his people want freedom, just want to be out from under his rule. It's a very complex situation because the nature of Gaddafi for years, he was looked up to as sort of like a heroic figure in the third world. He armed and funded various liberation movements like the Irish Republican Army, the Palestine Liberation Organization, the African National Congress. He's still friends with Nelson Mandela and with the ANC luminaries. He's friends with various liberation movements that are going on right now in Latin America. So that's part of the reality. It's also reality that he used Libya's oil wealth to sort of build up the infrastructure of the country and give the people a little bit of a higher standard of living. The other side of the reality is that for the past 8 years, I would say, since 03, and because it was 03, Bush attributed it to a natural outgrowth of the Iraq War. But for the past 7-8 years, Gaddafi has sort of been brought in from the cold, so to speak. No longer a member of the Axis of Evil. He was given a seat at the table. Tony Blair shook hands with him. He had an audience at the White House, at the Bush White House. And part of being brought in from the cold, as is natural almost, is that he was required to implement these economic reforms, these austerity measures, which in a very short amount of time have undid a lot of the genuine, more equitable economic progress that was made in Libya in the early years of his administration. In just a shorter time, if not shorter, most of those progress and benefits, most of them have gone by the wayside thanks to the measures that he has implemented in Libya in order to continue to be on the good side of the U.S., Italy, France, Germany, the U.K., etc., the very people who are bombing his forces right now. Libya, by far, is the most complex situation out of all of these countries. On one hand, you have what I just described, this economic inequality now that exists in the country that did not before. You have a country, you have a leader who is beloved by a lot of people still to this day around the globe, and even in Tripoli and in parts of Libya, but is hated by large segments of the population as well. You also have people in the protest movement who are monarchists, who favor the return of the monarchy in Libya, and you have frontline combatants in Libya who are now. Gaddafi said that they were al-Qaeda. That's not exactly true, but they are Salafi. They are what you call fundamentalist Sunni. And a lot of the frontline combatants in Libya adhere to an ideology that, while they may not in name be Al-Qaeda, in terms of ideology, in terms of worldview, it's very much like that. So it's important for people to realize that as bombs are falling in Libya, the people who are benefiting aren't necessarily the people who want democracy, the people who want economic justice and equality. More than likely, the people who are benefiting are, on the one hand, monarchists, and on the other hand, Salafi combatants. I'm hesitant to say much more because I think I'm already painting like a picture that a lot of people are not going to agree with, even though it is factual. I've talked to independent journalists who've returned from East Libya recently, and what I'm saying about the combatants is absolutely true. The vast, vast majority of people who are taking up arms now and fighting Gaddafi are Salafi, are, to define that term, fundamentalist Sunni adherents. And it's important for people to realize that. Having said that, I also think that interviewing the Libyan solidarity folks here is important, so that their side of the story is also told. Because I have a feeling that what I'm saying here is not going to jive with what they say. And I think what's going on is important enough that a broader representation, array of viewpoints should be heard. So, if you don't mind, let's walk around and talk to one of these people.
Let's do that. And can you just say it again? I think I understand it. Are you saying that by the U.S. bombing in Libya, the U.S. government is assisting an Al-Qaeda-like push?
Yeah, it's very, it's not, people have likened it to the situation in Afghanistan in 1980. And I don't think it's too far off at all. Yeah.
What was that situation, Afghanistan?
Oh, okay, Afghanistan in 1980 was a situation where the Soviet Union militarily moved into the country to help buttress the communist government, which was under tremendous pressure from various Islamist movements in the countryside. In response to the Soviet Union, the U.S. poured arms, money, and training into the factions of the Mujahideen, the armed Islamic combatants. Over a period of 8 or 9 years, the Mujahideen were able to drive the Soviets out of the country at a tremendous cost to the people of Afghanistan, to the infrastructure of Afghanistan. The war devastated the country. People talk about, you know, the tens of thousands of Soviet troops who were killed. For Afghanistan, the toll was much higher. Whether the end result was good or not, I mean, it's good that people who were invaders, essentially military invaders, were driven out. But even in the aftermath of the Soviet Union leaving Afghanistan, the country was destroyed, decimated by internecine warfare and civil war between these various Islamic factions that had all been funded and trained and financed by the U.S., all of them. The situation in Libya...
Including bin Laden.
Including bin Laden. It's important to note that. The situation in Libya is going to be really, really bad for the Libyan people. Arming Hillary Clinton, going over there, meeting with those folks, arming them, intervening militarily on their behalf, and an intransigent leader in place who's not going to step down no matter what. None of this spells a happy ending. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I can tell you that it's going to be bloody, and it's going to be... It's not going to be pretty. And people should know that. People should know that. To say nothing of... Well, to say nothing of the half-life of the depleted uranium, which is in those munitions that is being dropped on Libya right now. I don't want to go into that aspect of it right now, but it is important. But this, what's going on, is very important. This intervention is unjust on so many levels. Not just from the level that Kucinich is putting it in, which is a strictly constitutionalist framework. It's unjust on a lot of different levels. And the greatest injustice of all is that people don't even know what's going on in Libya, why the U.S., France, Germany, U.K., Italy are intervening, who they're intervening on behalf of. The situation in Libya is dire, and it's going to get worse. It's a civil war in Libya right now, and the bloodshed has just started, I feel.
Why are those countries that you mentioned intervening?
Libya has the largest oil reserves in all of Africa underneath its sands. We can begin and end there, I think. I think we can begin and end there.
Let's find someone to talk to. Get another point of view. War in Libya, we say no. U.S. intervention has got to go. Your name?
My name is Sara Lukmati. I'm from Libya.
Why did you come out today in front of the White House?
I'm coming as a Libyan lady today here at White House to support my Libyan people over there. They arming by Gaddafi and his regime. We are looking forward to help and support from the White House and the American government, as well as the European Union, as France and Britain.
So what specifically are you looking for from the White House?
Because person who is Colonel Gaddafi is a dictator. It has dictatorship. So no one in Libya over there can be able to force him and to stop him. So those American government and European government help and support Libyan people actually over there to let him to go out and stop force and bombing the Libyan people.
And so what about the U.S. bombing Libya? How do you see that?
I'm seeing that the United States, they don't bombing Libyan people. They bombing the Colonel Gaddafi armies and his people who are agree with him. So we are looking as Libyan people for support as flight zone to stop the Gaddafi and his regime and his army.
Do you have any concerns? The U.S. has invaded Iraq. It's 8 years now. Afghanistan. That the U.S. intervention could be problematic for the Libyan people?
Actually, what I'm looking at this point exactly, we as a Libyan, we have different situation because the American government, they don't want to occupy my country. They came to support us over there and helping us. So we are, Libyan people, we are thankful for those government to support my family and my Libyan people over there.
Why do you oppose Gaddafi?
Because he did nothing for my country. The Libyan people over there, they are hungry, they are living in poor, there are no education. The youth people, they do nothing over there. So we are looking as Libyan people, and I'm a lady over from there to live in peaceful, to live in free life, in freedom, in real democracy. So this is what Libyan people actually looking for.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.